Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey, I am Todd Nesloni. We are here with episode 21 of Edu All-Stars. We are, you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-host today is...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me at I am Kessler on Twitter.
And today with us, we have fourth grade teacher Paula Noggle. She is the moderator of Fourth Chat on Twitter. She's a Den Star, a Simple K-12 ambassador, Microsoft Innovative Educator, and the co-founder of EdCamp New Orleans. And so we wanted to welcome you, Paula. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, Chris and Todd, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be interviewed.
Well, you know, we've been on a little roll lately with principals, and so it's nice to get back to teacher perspective and hear from somebody that's in the classroom. So we're excited to hear a little different perspective than we've had the last couple weeks on Edu All Stars. And what we usually start with is just telling us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in education.
Okay, well, I was not one of those little girls that grew up playing school. I started college not to become a teacher, but to become a medical technologist. And that didn't quite work out. I had a little problem with some of my science classes. And so I was about 2 years into college, and I went to my counselor and I said, this career path I've chosen really isn't working out for me, and you know, what can I do with all my credits, da-da-da-da-da. So in a long round way-about process, she suggested I get a degree in education. And I went, really? I said, that wasn't really on my radar. So I said, okay, well, I was ready to get out of school, out of college, get a degree, and see what happened. So at the time, I was going to school in Pennsylvania. And for those of you not familiar with the state of Pennsylvania, they have quite a few teacher colleges. So at that point in time, back in the 70s, when I graduated, it was going to take several years for me to get a teaching position because there was such an overload of teachers. So I just got my degree, and at the time I was married, and I said, I'll just do some other things. So we had moved around with my husband's job. We got transferred to St. Louis, and then we got transferred to New Orleans. And when I got transferred to New Orleans, I'd been trying to get jobs doing other things, and I was like, okay, well, I have this teaching degree. Let me check with the Louisiana Department of Education and see what's going on in Louisiana. And they were like, I just happened to hit a time when they were really at a desperate need for educators. And they gave me my certification without even having to take, like, a class in Louisiana history, which, you know, most states need to do. They just sent me my certification. So I was like, okay, well, now I'm certified. Let's see what happens. So I started looking for a job, and I did summer camp at this private school, and the headmaster called me in a couple weeks into the summer camp, and he said, would you like to teach at our school this coming fall? And I went, really? And he said, yeah. And I said, sure. So he offered me a fourth grade position, which I took, and I stayed there for a couple of years. Like I said, it was a private school, and of course you don't make a lot of money in a private school. And I enjoyed it. Of course, I had the usual first-year problems, you know, where you think you're making these wonderful lessons, and then all of a sudden the kids aren't doing well, and the parents are you know, kind of like knocking on your door all the time going, what's wrong? My child's not making good grades and all this. So there were a lot of growing pains. I stayed there 3 years, and unfortunately the school and I didn't have a good fit. There was no professional development. There was no observations. There was no, I mean, I was in my classroom just doing my thing, and I wasn't growing at all. And I thought, oh, if I'm going to do this, I need to find a better way to do it. So I switched schools, and I went to a public school. And luckily, I found an awesome principal who was one of my very first mentors in education. And the first time she observed me, it was awful. And she talked to me and said, she said, you have great, you know, my classroom management and my transitions were okay. She said, but you're teaching over the kids' heads. She said, you need to gear it down to their level. So we met. She actually took time out on her weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays, and I went over to school, and she and I worked through lessons. for about, oh, at least a month, maybe 6 weeks. And by the time of my second observation and evaluation, I had really improved with my actual teaching. So that's where I feel like, you know, how great it was to be supported by a woman who saw that I had the potential to be a great teacher, but I was really struggling at that point mm-hmm. in time. And had she not grabbed a hold of me and offered that to me, I don't know if I would have stayed in education, which is a sad thing to say. And now here it is 38 years later, and I, you know, had a lot of different things. I've only changed schools. Then I changed to a different public school to be closer to my home. But, you know, I've been there ever since. And at year 30, I really, truly thought about retiring from the classroom. I was kind of at a point where, okay, I've done it, done everything, didn't want to be a principal. A lot of my friends said, why don't you become a principal? And I was like, nah, not interested. I wanted to do something in the consulting field. Well, I checked into it, and we have a kind of a weird thing in the state of Louisiana. If you have a teacher retirement, and then you go into the private sector where you put into Social Security, you can't draw both in the state of Louisiana when you retire. So I thought, well, if I'm going to keep working and I'm going to go into a situation where my money goes into Social Security but I'll never see it when I retire, why don't I just stay in education? And at the same time, I also attended NEC, which is the precursor to ISTE, happened to be held in New Orleans that year. The year was 2004. It was held in New Orleans, and my principal at that time and my media specialist wanted to take a teacher to the conference, so they said, Paula, we know you like tech. You're always asking questions about it. Why don't you go? So I said, yeah, I'm there. So I spent 3 days going to sessions, and I came home from the sessions, and I went, what are these words these people are talking about? Good names and wikis and all the, you know, podcasts and digital. I was like, okay, I must be living under a rock, because I thought I knew a little bit about technology, but boy, did I have a lot to learn. So it was at that point that I said, okay, if I can get technology into my classroom the way that I was learning, I had learned about it at NEC, and could do some of these things with my students, such as doing video conferencing, having a wiki, different things like that, blogging with my kids, I said, this could be really interesting. I could really enjoy it. So sure enough, that's what I started doing. And I got a model technology classroom was given to me by my school district. Had one of the first interactive whiteboards in our district.
Wow.
And, you know, went from there. And everything that came down the road, or, you know, the first document camera in. Yeah, I'll take one, you know, give it to me. Oh, you want a flip cam? Yeah, give it to me. Let me see what I can do with it. So every tool that came out, I was like, I want it. I want to try it. I want to see what I can do with it. And my principal and my media specialist knew that. So they knew I was on board to try it. And then, of course, we had this little thing, this little event that kind of derailed me for a little bit called Hurricane Katrina 2005. So I got kind of sidetracked a little bit during the year of Katrina and then the year after Katrina when we were rebuilding the city of New Orleans and our structure. Our school, luckily, was not severely damaged, but we lost a lot of our people, and so we went back to a whole new group of kids that had moved out of different parishes into our parish, and it changed our environment a lot. So we had a lot of growing pains to go through after Katrina. So it took another couple of years to get all that situated, and then 2009 was another milestone for me. My New Year's resolution for 2009 was to build a PLN. I'd heard about it. Funny thing is, those are my initials. And I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to create a blog, and I'm going to get on Twitter. And I, at the time, Nings were free, and I started a Ning for other fourth grade teachers in my district. And I was all over it. And I can remember the night that I sent out the invites to the Ning. I felt like a parent expecting a baby. I kept waiting for why to me. Okay, is anybody going to join the Ning? Am I going to get any membership? Is anybody going to join? Do they think this is great? Do they think this is stupid? You know, what do they think? So we finally got some members to join it over the next couple of days. Then I started Twitter, and of course I made all the mistakes that people do way back then on Twitter, because there wasn't a lot of information out there. So who did I follow? I followed all the celebrities and all that silliness, and I go, I don't get this. It didn't make sense to me. Of course, that was before the day of the hashtag, and I following the different conversations was a little tough, and I didn't know who to follow, and I thought, I don't have anything to really say, and you know, all those things that first-timers go through. Well, there was this girl named Bess Still. At Bess Still is her Twitter handle. Teacher in Nebraska, high school teacher in an alternative school in Nebraska, saw me on Twitter, started interacting with me, and grabbed me by the hand, so to speak, by the virtual hand, and helped me along. And thanks to Beth, I finally figured out how to use Twitter and what it was all about and the power of being connected to other educators via Twitter instead of celebrities.
Yeah.
So she really walked me through it. And then I had gone to ISTE in San Antonio in 2008. I went all by myself. I went to sessions. I went to my hotel room. I went to dinner by myself because I was not a connected educator. I probably met the few people sitting around me during the sessions. We exchanged emails, things like that. I did keep up with a couple of them after the conference, but definitely wasn't connected. Well, in 2009, when I got on Twitter, ISTE was in Washington, and I couldn't wait to go to ISTE because I had already made plans to meet Beth face-to-face and a few other people that I was tweeting with. And when I got there, it was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, because people that I've interacted with just socially online, I now get to meet face-to-face, but we don't have to go through, oh, well, I'm Paula and I do this and da-da-da, because yeah. They knew about us, you know. As a friend of mine says, Joan Young, who's a fourth grade teacher in California, has a great analogy. She said, having connected with someone, usually on Twitter, but through social media, and then meeting them face-to-face is like being able to jump in on page 100 of a book. You already know all the beginning stuff, and now you're getting into the meat of the conversation or the meat of what's going on. So ever since then, sometimes my ISTE trip gets paid for by my district, but even if it doesn't, I always make plans to go to ISTE because it is the highlight of my summer. I absolutely thoroughly 100% enjoy it, meeting up with all my friends, hanging out with people, both at sessions, at the social cafes that they have, going out to dinner with them, and all of the different things that go on at ISTE. So it's awesome.
I will say that, I mean, this was my first year at ISTE, and being a connected educator and getting to go to ISTE for the first time as a connected educator, I think it made it that much more powerful because it just like you said, you can jump in on page 100. I mean, it's amazing the amount of depth that you can already jump in with somebody after never having met them in person.
And one of the things, one of the other people that was a mentor of mine was Jennifer Wagner, and this was before I started social media. I wanted to do some collaborative projects, and I had no idea how to do that. And Jen Wagner runs Projects by Jen, and she does a couple of different projects, and she has you do them in your classroom, and then she always puts together some online space. Usually it was a wiki or maybe a Ning back in the day. And so in 2004, I started doing those with her, and of course one of our favorites is the Oreo Project, and since I teach math, it fits in nicely because who doesn't like Oreo cookies? Come on. So what you do is the kids bring in their Oreo cookies and they stack them up on one on top of each other and they get to do it twice and you keep class records of the number of cookies and everybody's stacked and then you find your range, mode, and media and then you enter your data into Jen's wiki space so that everybody can see it. She usually incorporates Google Maps so you can have a dot on the map showing that you were a participant in the project. And then one time she did one about Abraham Lincoln's 200th birthday, and we tried to do this Skype where everybody was saying the Gettysburg Address via Skype. Well, I was so new to Skype that I Skyped from one classroom in my building to the classroom next door because I couldn't figure out how to do anything else. So I put half my kids in one room, and we did it with half the kids in the other room.
That's so great.
And I can remember calling Jen that summer and Skyping with her privately and saying, I need help with Skype. I really, you know, it's a great tool, but I'm not sure I'm using it right. And she gave me some lessons on Skype. And that's, you know, that's what I love about most educators. You know, to me, she was this huge voice in education, and yet she's very humble and she's very sharing and she's very good about, well, you don't understand something, you have a question, yes, I'll take some time and help you, you know, paying it forward is right. Huge.
I was thinking about that on the way to school this morning, that one of the biggest sins in, as an educator, you could do was to not share with each other. I just think that that's just so wrong, and it happens far too often. And
yeah. Well, I've been at this, you know, really for so long. I can remember
that.
I can remember being in a classroom for years. You walk in, you know, you hi everybody in the morning as you're signing in or having coffee or whatever in the teacher's lounge and maybe a little bit at lunch. And that was it. The doors got closed during the day. You went about your little world. You know, it was you and however many kids you had in the classroom every day. And that was the extent of the connection. And since what I do now with Skype and Google Hangouts, it is just unbelievable the things you can do. Like just this year, you know, I've done mystery Skypes. I've done mystery number calls. I've had a connection where a science teacher friend of mine in New Jersey did a Google Hangout into my classroom because we do a Google Hangout every Sunday where we're talking about different programs that we're running. And he said, oh, I just got some millipedes for my science class. And I said, oh, Dan, my kids would love to see your millipedes. Would you be able to share them with us? And he said, sure, I'll hang out with you. So sure enough, I teach two blocks, and he was kind enough to do it twice to come into my two different sessions, one of them during his planning period, and, you know, asked my kids questions about it, you know, went over the different things with the centipedes. We had just done a unit on the ecosystem where we talked about decomposers, and the kids absolutely loved it. Last year he did a dry ice experiments for my kids via Google Hangout. You know, I've had Jerry Blumengarten, Cyberary Man 1 on Twitter, you know, read to my class for a World Read Aloud Day. I've connected with an educator in South Africa who teaches math, and he does brain puzzles with my kids. And, of course, it takes him a little while to get used to his South African accent. but once they got used to what he was saying, after he repeated himself a few times, they got into it, and they spent 45 minutes having this wonderful conversation with this gentleman in South Africa, you know. And then the other thing that I don't do as much of, because I'm not an English language arts teacher, I'm a math, science, social studies teacher, but I was determined to get blogging into my classroom. I was like, I'm going to blog. Somehow I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to put it in my class. Right. So what I decided to do was to do math reflective journals instead of doing it in our notebooks. We would do it on our blog instead. So for 1 year I ran, way too many, 100 and something blogs because I was teaching three classes of math that year. And I did it by kidblog.org. I'm sorry, as always, there goes the phone. but that's okay. It'll get, the answer machine will get it.
Wait, you still have a landline?
We can't.
Yeah, an answer machine? What is that?
It's just
wow.
But yeah, I keep it. I needed it, I thought, for hurricane protection, just in case. And last year, during our only hurricane last year, guess what went out first?
The landline.
The landline. But yeah. So anyhow, back to what I was saying. So with blogging, that's another great way to use Twitter. If you do have your kids blogging, you can use the hashtag comments for kids, and the people that was that particular hashtag was started by William Chamberlain, who is an educator in Missouri. And William and I actually did a con session 3, I guess it was, on that hashtag, because it's so powerful to get global comments for your students on their blogs by using that hashtag. So it worked out, but I can honestly tell you it was a lot of time and effort, and I regrouped, and I don't do blogging quite that same way now. I only have a few of my students blog. I don't use it, of course, for any kind of assessment. I just take my kids that are really interested in having their own online space. Their parents are okay with it. I set it up with it. I do moderate it, but it is no longer a class-wide thing. It was just way too time-consuming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I got to do it for that 1 year. My kids wrote, I don't know, 1,000 blog posts. We had over 2,000 blog comments, and it was a wonderful year experience, but it was hard.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was a big time commitment for sure.
So one of the things you also work on is the Fourth Chat. Tell us a little bit about that.
We began Fourth Chat in March of 2011. Is that how long we've been doing it? I was contacted by Jeannie McQueen, teacher in Colorado, who unfortunately due to health reasons right now is not one of the moderators on 4th Chat, but we check in with her every now and then. But she invited me to be a co-moderator on 4th Chat, and I said, sure. And I knew just enough about how chats run at that time because I'm good friends with Steve Anderson and the crew from EdChat, Shelly Terrell and that crew, and occasionally would do EdChat. But, you know, I like the power of a smaller chat.
Right.
And having the grade level chat is really interesting because, you know, not that we don't want to exclude anybody when we do get people to teach other grade levels, but we can talk about issues that are particular to our fourth grade curriculum. And now with the Common Core curriculum impacting so many different teachers around the country, we can spend a lot of time talking about the various things we're doing in our classrooms that really do connect better. You know, 2 years ago, before I was doing Common Core, I might be doing something in math, and another teacher in Colorado was doing this, and another teacher in Missouri was doing something altogether. And what I do find about the Common Core is it is pulling us into a more common denominator as far as what we were teaching. So that's good. Sorry that Texas isn't part of it, Todd.
I know. Not yet. We always have to be last so we can make a scene.
Well, you know, Texas likes to be their own little thing. Their own little thing. Notice how I said that. Their own big
thing. Got our own thing going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I am not a Common Core basher. I think what it was intended to do is powerful. I believe that having a national curriculum is a powerful thing. And like I said, especially in today's world where so many people, you know, move from place to place constantly, right. not maybe from state to state, but just from community to community, there was so much difference in what went on even in one state sometimes. So I find that it does help us get on a more common playing field as far as what's being taught in each grade level. What I don't like about it, of course, is the assessment piece that's being attached to it. But
right.
That's a discussion for another day.
Well, you know, you're also really involved with Discovery Education. You're a DIN star, and you do a lot with them. And how did that relationship with Discovery come about?
Our school is, uses Discovery streaming as one of our subscription-based programs. I had used it within my classroom. I was, like I said, I was one of the first people that had projection system in my classroom, so I was lucky that I could do it, you know, whole class instead of just, you know, on a desktop computer. And I found it to be a very powerful tool, and I wanted to learn more about it. So one day, I probably was, again, through social media, somebody mentioned about being a den star. And I said, oh, well, how do you do that? And they said, well, you use Discovery. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, go to your Discovery page and log in. And over on this right-hand corner, there's information about how to become a den star. So I said, okay, I'll check that out. So it's pretty easy process. You go through and you watch a couple videos. You take a couple quizzes about the product itself. And then you do make a commitment to do some different sessions or things within your school or your district, or if you're a national presenter, to spread the word of Discovery Education. And, of course, now Discovery has more things than just their streaming. They have their tech book for science, their tech book for math. They just recently implemented a thing called the Student Board Builder, which is very similar to Glogster, if anybody's ever used Glogster, an online poster creator. It's almost identical to that, and right. It's in the Discovery thing. So when you become a Discovery educator and you're helping spread the word of Discovery for them, they in turn give back to you, and they offer you some of their tools for free, even though my district doesn't pay for all of the tech books. I do have access to them because I'm part of Louisiana Leadership Council. So I find that, you know, that is a nice little hand-in-hand thing that goes along. Mm-hmm. And then they offer you a competitive way to attend a week-long summer session called the Den Summer Institute, and it's through a competition. You have to create a video. You have to answer questions about why you should be chosen to attend. I've been fortunate enough to be selected to go for 3 summers, and I just went to Vermont this past summer and spent a week with 130 of my very close Den friends, and we do all sorts of professional development, both by leading ed tech people that are brought in, by Discovery people that are brought in, but also by each other, because there are a lot of people. I mean, each person, it might take them a while to figure out what it is, but each one of us has something that we are doing and doing well and that we can share with other people. So right. That's become a very big part of the Den community. They say that they are proud to connect us to our most valuable resource, which is each other.
Each other.
They love that. That's their motto. So we spend a lot of time. I mean, it's from 7 in the morning till 9 at night or so, and it's nonstop fun, learning, sharing. And we actually did a community project in the Burlington area. We do field trips. I mean, it's really an awesome week of learning with them. And then, of course, they offer virtual field trips. They offer webinars all the time. They offer virtual PD, and those are open to everybody. You don't have to necessarily be a Den star to do that. But if you are a Discovery user, I would strongly recommend looking into becoming a Discovery star educator.
Mm-hmm. So now that you're a veteran teacher, what kind of advice do you give maybe other veteran teachers who are hesitant or reluctant to get on board with technology?
One of my favorite things to do, and this is kind of how I started, is I would take a favorite lesson of mine, and I'd say, okay, this was a lesson that I did, and I used it a couple times, and the kids enjoyed it, I enjoyed it, it met, you know, the standards I was teaching, but it didn't have any technology integrated into it. And I would look at the lesson and I'd think, what way could I integrate a little bit of tech into this lesson? Could it be by having the kids make a paper slide video as a culminating activity using the flip cams or whatever webcam, whatever video camera you have, and putting it together? And back when I started, I didn't have a YouTube channel. I would just use PhotoStory 3. Or if you're a Mac person, you could use, iMovie on the Mac, and have the kids create a little video. Or I used Vukaroo, and I had them do a 30-second little recording of, when I taught English language arts, they were doing book reports. And I thought, well, how can I get a tech piece in? Oh, I know. I'll have them do a 30-second voice recording about why you should read this book or something like that. Or I would do a project and I'd think, is there a way that I could video conference another class and do something collaborative with the other class while we're video conferencing during this lesson? So that's how I began my integration of technology. It was just taking one lesson at a time and trying to figure out what could I do to add that tech piece. And I became very familiar with the ISTENET standards and looked at them often and said, yeah, I can do that. And now I don't even think about it. It just happens. I don't even think about adding tech to it. Tech is just part of my everyday existence.
Well, I also know from talking with you when I've met you in person before, you've talked about a sister class before, and that was very interesting to me. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and how that came to be?
Sure can. The year, again, of 2009, part of my PLN growth was I wanted to find a buddy classroom. And, again, Jennifer Wagner had started a Ning that went hand-in-hand with her projects. And that summer, she had put a group in the Ning called Skype Buddies. So I joined the Skype Buddy group on the Ning, and a girl named Jan Wells in Kansas joined it. I think we joined within a day of each other. And so when I went back the next day, I saw she was on it. She taught fourth grade. She saw I was on it and taught fourth grade. So we started communicating back and forth in the Ning, saying, hey, we both teach fourth grade. We're looking to be Skype partners. Why don't we buddy up? So she and I exchanged emails, and then, you know, from emails we did Skype IMing over the summer, and then we, you know, exchanged phone numbers, and we just became closer and closer that summer and started talking about how we could get our classes connected, and we started doing that in 2009, and we've been doing it ever since. Jan and I have been Skype buddy classrooms since then, and at least once a month we try to connect our classes with a Skype project that we can do collaboratively together. And it has varied. It has been widely varied from doing one time they were getting ready to do a presentation at a PTO meeting that night for their PTO. So Jan asked if they could do like a dress rehearsal for my class of their presentation. And they were doing a song and a poem that had to do with westward expansion. We said, sure, we'd love to see it. Another time my kids and I had done a rounding cadence. And so I said, look, I wrote this rounding cadence. My kids have learned to perform it. We'd love to share it with you. Another time I have a very dear friend who comes in every year and teaches my kids about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. He is not a teacher. He is a construction worker who happens to have a passion of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. If you ever want to know anything about it, ask me and I'll ask James because he'll have the answer. And just sitting around one night over adult refreshments, I invited him into my classroom and I said, you are so awesome. I said, I want you to come guest speak to my students about it. And he said, sure. So the first couple times he came, he just spoke to my class. We came in the third year and all of a sudden there are cameras set up and there's all this stuff going on. I didn't want him to be nervous, so I didn't tell him ahead of time that we were Skyping him into another classroom because I didn't want him to freak out. Uh-huh. So here he is, he's got, you know, the webcam here, and we've got a flip cam going on over here, and I've got kids with digital stills, and he's like, where do I look? I said, just sit in your chair like you normally do and talk to us. And he kept turning around looking at the Promethean board because he thought he had to look at the board for the kids to see him. And I said, no, the camera's in front of you, you're okay. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that are awesome to do. We've done choral readings together. We've done the Oreo project together. She does a project called States in a Container, where her children do state projects, and they find a container. It could be, I'm trying to think of some of the ones she's done. It's bigger than a shoebox, and they're just amazing. Like one was in a spaceship kind of capsule and different things. And the kids are very imaginative about how they do their state within a container. Then I ran a passion project, kind of like a genius hour project, and we did that through Edmodo, but Jan and I wanted to have our kids Skype with each other and talk about their passions with each other, so we did that over a couple of different weekends. Then on fourth grade chat, after state testing 1 year, we said, okay, a whole bunch of us have Skyped with each other through Mystery Skype or through other projects. And instead of making it real, okay, at such and such a time, on such and such a day, we're going to Skype and talk about this, I had this brainstorm and I said, why don't we put together a Google Doc? And now that testing's over and we're kind of in a more relaxed state in our classroom, why don't we do a thing called impromptu Skype calls? We'll keep Skype open. When we see that a class we've already connected with during the year is online, we'll place a Skype call. Just out of the clear blue, we'll just call you. If you can take it, you take it. If you can't, just rings and you ignore it. And so we did that, and we got several people to participate in it. And so, of course, who was my first impromptu Skype call to? It was to Jan in Kansas. So, it's ringing, and all of a sudden she picks up, and my kids are all excited. They think we're going to be talking to Jan and her fourth grade students. And all of a sudden we're looking at a classroom full of adults. And I went, oh, what's going on? She said, oh, we have a professional development day today. And she said, this is perfect, because I'm talking about how I'm connected with other people and how I use Skype, and you decided to do an impromptu Skype call into my classroom. And not knowing that I was doing this today, and I said, sure. So my kids had just completed some projects for Earth Day, and that's what we were going to share with her students, so we ended up sharing them with her teachers instead. So that was fun.
I'll tell you, I did a session last week at Region 4 about connecting your classroom globally, and I used this story because I remember you telling me of how you did the impromptu Skype calls. Mm-hmm. And so, uh-huh. I was like, y'all can even do this? They're like, that sounds wild. I was like, yeah, but if Paula does it, it works. So you can do it.
I had to laugh, though, when you were doing your presentation. A friend of mine in New Jersey asked me to do a Google Hangout with his pre-service teachers about 2 weeks ago. He said, I'm not telling them what we're doing. He said, I'm just going to call you and just be ready. He goes, but I want your kids to teach my students about how to do a mystery location call. And I said, okay, fine. So we get started, and I introduce myself, and I tell them what we're doing. And I bring up my first little guy, and he goes, are you all on the east side of the Mississippi River?
And of course, I knew that's where you were going with that.
The whole class starts cracking up because it kind of gives away our location just a little bit.
Yep, so that's very true. Yeah. Y'all is the worst, is the enemy of a Southerner when doing a mystery Skype call.
But it was so funny. But I couldn't help but laugh when you did that. Are y'all? So we've had a big discussion about trying not to use y'all when we're doing mm-hmm. mystery location calls, but it's just part of our everyday life.
That's right. And,
it's fun. But, things that I like to do also, one of my projects is my students for social studies do a Mardi Gras project. Mardi Gras is a huge part of our culture here in New Orleans. And so the kids research and get a project together. They usually make a Glogster, or some of them make trifolds, or some of them write a blog post or whatever. And we usually do it through Edmodo, and then we end up doing Skype calls to present to other classrooms. And that's fun. And the first year I did it, I was very ambitious, but I was only doing 5 classes that year. So I actually sent them a care package before we did the mystery Skype call. The Mardi Gras call. And I would send the package out that included a king cake, doubloons, which are the coins that are thrown off the floats, not balloons, doubloons, and beads. And the package would arrive like maybe a day or two before the call. And I'd say, don't open the package till after we've done the Skype call with you, because, you know, they're going to learn about what's in the package during the call. So that was fun. But, of course, I can't continue to do that, because now we do the call with so many different people that my bill for mailing out those packages would be astronomical. But from that, I got to do calls with people in Texas who taught us about the Fiesta and Cinco de Mayo. I've gotten to do calls with people in Canada teaching us about Canada Day and Canadian Thanksgiving and things like that. So I love the cultural exchange that can happen.
Yeah, that's the best part about connecting your class. And I'm sure it's true about your students like it is about ours, is a lot of them aren't even ever going to leave the area where they are living right now. Mm-hmm. And so providing them with those opportunities is monumental for their educational experience, because that may be the only time they experience that. And, you know, I said in a session the other day, it's like a lot of my students as well adopt the cultural beliefs of their parents when it comes to different ethnicities and genders and all kinds of stuff. And so it's good to provide them with views of other cultures and ethnicities where they can learn from them in a positive way and see you can form your own opinions about people.
What's so powerful about my class Skyping to another classroom is that we are very ethnically diverse. Okay, so when the camera comes on my classroom, it's like the United Nations, okay? And when we Skype with Jan's class in rural Kansas, that's one of the first things my students notice. They're like, Snoggle, they're all white. And I'm like, yeah, they are. I said, you know, in some areas, you know, the culture hasn't mixed as much as it has in the city of New Orleans and surrounding area. And it happened again this year. We just did a mystery number call last week. And I have a paraprofessional in the room during the time it was going on, and one of my students got up and went over and whispered in her ear, "There aren't any black children in that class." And, you know, and it happens, you know, that's what they're going to see. And I love the fact that I have children from the Middle East. I have children from Honduras. I have children from Nicaragua, you know, and Asian children all in my classrooms. So like I said, we are United Nations, and it's really interesting to Skype with classes that aren't as culturally diverse. And what's interesting about it is they're a little maybe taken aback when it first happens, maybe that first connection. Mm-hmm. But if you connect with them again and you do some other research, like one of the things that I like doing is collecting live data so that we can do graphs and things for math class. So instead of just, you know, doing data collection within my own classroom, we use Skype or Google Hangout to collect data from other classrooms. And we'll have the questions prepared, and then the kids, you know, will say, how many of you like da-da-da-da-da? And they'll do a hand count, and they'll, you know, collect the data that way. And after they've done that, they make the graphs from our classroom and Jan's classroom, they go, hey, guess what? We're all the same. We like the same thing, except we found our biggest difference was music. The one year when we did this, the survey was, I don't remember, I couldn't even begin to list the modern singers that my student put on it, but they didn't have any country stars on the list. So when we went into Jan's class and we were asking this particular survey question about favorite musicians, so the kids in Kansas are like, well, where are the country artists? You don't have any country on your list. We learned then to include the choice other on our data so that they would have, you know, a way of saying, well, no, these aren't any of my favorites. I have a different kind of favorite. So it is fun. Like I said, flattening your classroom walls is one of the most powerful things you can offer your students. And what my kids go, they start doing is, do you know this person too, Ms. Noggle? And I go, yeah, I know them either through Twitter or Facebook. Mm-hmm. Or no, I've actually met this one face-to-face at a conference. So one day somebody called in, and I actually did one with a person in Vermont recently, and I didn't know her. She had contacted me on Twitter through a sign-up that I was on, and she said that she would like to do a mystery call, and I said, sure. So it was my first connection with her. But what was funny was she was in Vermont. So after my students figured out that she had been in Vermont, I shared with her the fact that I had just been in their little city was called Essex Station, which is how I got to Burlington this summer when I went to the Den Summer Institute. And I said, I just spent a week in Vermont this summer. So we are now going to do another Skype connection where we're going to talk about the products that are raised or come out of Louisiana versus the products that come out of Vermont.
Cool.
And, you know, things like that. And, it can expand and grow leaps and bounds.
It's like crawfish and Ben and Jerry's. You know?
That's it. Oh, Ben and Jerry's was so much fun to go to. I enjoyed that.
Well, you know, Paula, one thing we always like to ask our guests when they're on the show is for them to share a time when there was a big mistake they made in their career or something that they really learned from. Do you have one of those instances you can think of?
A big mistake that I learned from. Oh,
or
God.
Or when you fell flat on your face. I mean, I know we all have many.
I was going to say, which one do I choose? Probably the biggest one would be when I tried to do that Skype thing, that Skype connection the first time, and I had never, like, tried a small one, or I had never done Skype with anybody, and here I was trying to jump into this massive one without having laid a little bit of groundwork first, and it really went badly. And like I said, I ended up Skyping from one room to the next because I just couldn't figure out the connection.
Right.
But what I did learn from it was that I had a lot to learn, that I needed to reach out to my PLN, that I needed to figure out what I was doing wrong and how to make it better. And that was what was so powerful about having a PLN, because I had people to do that with. And it's like the first time, another example, I wanted to learn how to use Google Hangouts. Well, because of my Skype involvement, I thought, there's no way I'm ever going to get on a Google Hangout until I've done a bunch of them with some people that, you know, we can laugh at each other, and if we mess up, we mess up. So this past summer, 4th Chat people got together, and we did a lot of Google Hangouts together this summer to practice using them. And, of course, we turned on the effects, and we did all the silly hats and the little smiley faces and things. And then, of course, we learned how to do the lower third together. So, you know, we're helping each other learn these tools, which is what I love. But, yeah, as far as falling on your face or falling down or, you know, it not going well, yes, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Murphy's Law does exist, so always have a backup plan. Sometimes you even need not just plan B, but sometimes a plan C, and just be prepared. Some days it's going to go swimmingly well, and other days you're going to go, what was I thinking?
Yep.
Why did I decide to do this? You know. But I can tell you this, once you become comfortable with it, invite people in that are important, like your admin. After I had done a couple of Skype calls that went well, I did that. I would call my principal and go, okay, I'm doing a Skype call day. Come on up if you can. Or, you know, and one time I almost couldn't move in my classroom. They brought the superintendent in and the camera crew, and there were so many bodies in my classroom. And I'm a mover, you know, I'm walking around my room, and I almost tripped over a camera. They were filming. So, yeah.
So, what's something that you're super passionate about right now in education?
I am super passionate right now in education about helping others become connected and learning how to do what I'm learning how to do. Not only is it so much fun, but it is so important for our kids to learn about becoming connected. This is the world that they're going to live in, to exist in. You know, I teach 4th graders. They're 9 and 10. I don't even know what kind of jobs are going to exist when they get out there in the big world. You know, of course there's going to be the typical ones, but there's going to be some other ones that I don't even know what they're called yet. But what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to know how to communicate. They're going to know how to collaborate. They're going to have to know how to be critical thinkers and problem solvers. And they're going to have to be creative. So those are the things that I want to model for everybody right now, you know. And, yes, we have standards to teach, but, you know, it's not just necessarily about learning the multiplication facts. what are you going to do with your multiplication when you finally get on top of the facts? What do you do with that stuff afterwards? So those are the things that I'm passionate about. Helping others, paying it forward is a big thing for me. I have several guys on Twitter that I met at the ISTE conference that I sat down with one-on-one or one-on-two or three, helped them learn about Twitter, and their careers have taken off like gangbusters. They're probably going to end up being, you know, I don't know, maybe they'll be the next Arnie Duncan. Who knows?
There we go. Well, Paula, thank you so much for coming on our show tonight. I love getting to talk to you whenever I can, since I don't get to see you that much in person. But we really appreciate you giving us some of your time to come and chat with us today.
Well, I appreciate it. And, Chris, I had a question for you.
All right, let's have it.
You're a science teacher, is that correct?
That's correct, eighth grade.
Eighth grade. So if you ever find something that you would like to, you know, maybe your students have a project or something that they would like to share with my fourth graders, please keep me in mind, because I know you and I haven't made that connection yet, but I would sure be willing to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We're going to be doing a couple projects here soon, so yeah, we could definitely do that.
Okay, well, guys, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for having me and inviting me to be an Edu All-Star. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Episode 21.
Whoa, I like that. That's a good number.
That's a great number, yeah.
A 21st Century Educator on episode 21.
I love that every guest we have has some importance that they make of their number. That's perfect. That fits perfectly. And for those of you that are listening, you can connect with us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle for EduAllStars is EduAllStarsHQ. And we use the hashtag EduAllStars sometimes when tweeting. Our website is eduallstars.com, where you can check out all of the other 20 interviews that are up there, including our interview yesterday with the Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan. And you can also find all of the recordings on iTunes just by searching EduAllStars with no spaces.
I just got a tweet from Beth. Aw, Paula, thanks. She's listening in.
Well, we wanted to let everybody know as well that our guest next week is Pernal Rip, who is a fifth grade teacher. We are excited to have her next Wednesday at 8 p.m. I have never got to chat with her before, so I'm excited to meet her and hear her story, because she is an amazing blogger, and I just can't wait to hear some more about what she's doing. So we'll have her next week.
Perfect.
And I'm PL Noggle on Twitter.
Yes.
So check out.
Do you have a website too, Paula, or just Twitter?
Yes, pnoggle@blogspot.com is my classroom.
Okay.
And plnoggle@blogspot.com is my professional blog.
Okay.
Awesome. If you've gotten this far, we'd encourage you to go to iTunes and leave us a rating or some feedback, or leave some comments in the show notes on the blog. It really helps get some eyeballs out there on the podcast, or earbuds on the podcast, and we'd really appreciate that.
Thank you guys for listening, and thank you again, Paula, for being here.
Thank you so much, thanks to all the people that have helped me do what I do. Thank you. Good night.